Tonight on Huckabee, Missouri Governor Mike Parson, inspirational athlete Cyan Clark, Laugh Out Loud with Brandon Bistel, and the Old Bridge Boys celebrate 50 years. That's Trey Corley in the Music City Connection. And I'm your announcer, Keith Bilbrey. And now, here's Mike Huckabee!
What a great crowd we have here in the theater tonight, and we are excited that you've joined us. All right, folks, the race for president is now set. It's a rematch of Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. For half of America, it means we're going to have to endure the mass media hysteria, the dark deeds of the deep state, and the uniparty swamp, better described as a sewer, declaring that support for Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. Actually, the real threat to democracy is that we have had a government that has used its power to not just silence the voices and views of millions of Americans, but have self-righteously carried out an attempted coup d'etat on a sitting president. There's been collusion with powerful and wealthy social media companies and the mainstream media, all to manipulate our elections by restricting a free press and free speech. This election that we're in this year will determine if America survives as a land of the free and home of the brave, or if we're just going to be shipwrecked on the shores of socialism. My contempt for what pretends to be journalism today grows by the day. Even the newspaper in my home state of Arkansas has become virtually unreadable in its unbalanced coverage of anything related to Donald Trump or the current governor in Arkansas, who I happen to know fairly well. And that's despite the fact that both of them have approval ratings of the voters in that state of over 70%. Maybe, just maybe, the problem is the arrogance and elitism of those who look down their privileged noses at working class people who have seen their paychecks and spending power decimated by the economic policies of socialism. Or maybe those who have had their traditional values of faith and family sneered at by those who irrationally believe that little boys can just announce that they're really little girls, or that girls can declare they're boys, and even have taxpayers pay to have their bodies permanently mutilated. Now, these same people believe that a perfectly healthy unborn baby can be dismembered in its mother's womb right up until the moment of birth. These are the so-called leaders who, in the name of security, go through our bags and put their government-gloved hands all over our bodies just for us to get on an airplane, but then allow 10 million illegal entries of people who have no ID, no passport, not even a library card. While veterans of our country, people who've worn our uniform, they've kept us free, while they sleep on streets in makeshift tents and cardboard boxes, those crossing over our wide-open border illegally are given hotel rooms, three meals a day, health care, and in places like New York, gift cards worth as much as $10,000. This week, we found out that not all the illegal immigration is sneaking across the border. We discovered that over 320,000 illegal immigrants were secretly flown by the U.S. government at your expense from Central and South America directly into at least 43 American airports. And then they got dropped off, so you get to pick up the tab for their living expenses, education, and health care. Oh, you might not be able to afford your own food, medicine, and education for your kids, but you're expected to pay for people who have no legal right to be here and who jumped the line in front of those who have patiently waited to legally immigrate to the United States. And the reason they have waited is because they genuinely want to be American. They want to join us in building a free country where hard work and responsibility can result in a dream come true. Under President Obama, the IRS targeted conservative, Christian, and pro-life groups. Remember the name Lois Lerner? Hey, they got caught, but not one person got charged with using the power of government to strip away the rights of American citizens for their political views. You may not even remember, but the Obama Justice Department tapped the phones of journalists like my friend James Rosen, even his parents, as well as tapping the phones of the Associated Press. Nobody got arrested. Donald Trump messed up the whole plan by beating Hillary Clinton back in 2016. The deep state went after him even before he was sworn in, and they have ruthlessly sought to destroy him personally, professionally, and politically. Joe Biden was supposedly elected despite barely popping out of his basement in 2020. And he's ramped up the abuse of government power to a level I never thought I'd see. Trump officials like Peter Navarro got shackled and jailed. Journalists like Stephen Baker were arrested, perp walked across a federal courthouse lawn because he had the audacity to report on the January 6 riots at the Capitol. Pro-life activists, people like Paul Vaughn, he was just on our show recently, are right now threatened with 11 years in prison for singing and praying at an abortion clinic in protest. You see, this election is not about Democrats and Republicans anymore. It really isn't. It's about freedom versus a totalitarian government who wishes to tell half of America to just shut up and go away. And if you vote for the people who are destroying freedom and justice in this country because you don't like the tweets of Donald Trump, then you lose the right to complain when your children get taken from you if you don't consent to their surgical gender reassignment, or if you're not allowed to have a credit card because you have the audacity to own a firearm. I want to make it real clear. I don't worship Donald Trump. I don't. When I hear people say, oh, these people that worship Donald Trump, I don't worship Donald Trump. I only worship Jesus Christ. But I do love my country. I love my freedom. And I love my family. And I absolutely will not help elect people who hate everything I stand for and who want to use the government to punish me for thinking and speaking for myself. And I hope you won't either. My first guest tonight is currently serving as the 57th governor of the great state of Missouri. He and I have got something in common as to having an unexpected entry into the office of governor. He was sworn into office under some very challenging conditions when the governor before him had to resign. But the people of Missouri have come to view his very effective tenure, for which he was reelected in his own right. They've seen it as a godsend to their state. Please welcome the author of the new book, No Turning Back, Missouri Governor Mike Parson. Governor, it's great to have you here. I think I need to start by saying congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs for a Super Bowl victory.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. I like that. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Hey, before we get started, Governor, I got a message I'm supposed to deliver to you.
You do?
It's kind of off the cuff.
Okay.
The governor of Arkansas just contacted me before he came in and wanted me to remind you that you're supposed to be responsible with her children while she's gone.
Yes.
So I delivered it, but as a grandparent, do what you want to do.
Well, she is on a trade mission to Asia. My wife and I are keeping her children, and boy, are we ruining their little faces.
Good for you.
Faces.
Good for you. I like it.
I took the boys to the store the other night. They said, can we have Oreos? I said, you bet you can. Can we have these ice cream cups? I said, absolutely, we're going to get those.
That's good.
So, Sarah, I know you're not watching because you're over there doing the Lord's work, but trust me, your kids are having a blast.
Good.
Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do, isn't it?
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Right. Well, You became governor under less than ideal circumstances. You were serving as lieutenant governor down there minding your own business.
Right.
The governor was forced to resign. It was an abrupt kind of moment, wasn't it?
Well, there's no question, you know, in this arena, as you well know, as you've been through this, most governors have 2 months to prepare for that transition. We had 48 hours to be able to assume those duties. So it definitely was thing that you hope under a little gray hair, you were prepared for that moment. You never really think it's going to happen, but it did. And from there, there was no turning back. Where the title of the book come from, actually, when I was going to be sworn in, my staff was getting ready to open the door, and there's national media, and everybody's there because everything, the cameras were clicking. I've never been on a stage like that before. And they said, well, what are you going to do now, Governor? I said, well, one thing for sure, I'm not turning back. So we had to go out there and
finish. It's a great title for the book, and I've been reading through it, and I think people are going to be truly impressed that this was, I think, the culmination of a lifetime of preparation for this. You had been in the state Senate, you'd been in the state House, but I think the bigger preparation that I saw in your story, you grew up on a farm. You grew up in old-fashioned ways of just treating people right and doing the right thing, not because a lawyer said you had a contract, but because you were raised to believe that the right thing is always the right thing.
I don't think there's any question, Mike. Faith, family, and freedom is how I grew up. My mom and dad were sharecroppers, and in a world of material things, didn't have much. As four of us boys, we went from farm to farm working for other people most of my younger days to be able to do that. And in the world of material things, we didn't have much. But I'll tell you what you had. You had everything everybody else did. A little town of 356 people, one of the poorest counties in the state. But you learn how to help neighbors, to help one another, to respect one another. You learn what it was like to sit in a church pew, Sunday nights, Sunday day, Wednesdays, revivals, the whole thing. That foundation is why I'm here today talking to you. And I've used it every day of my life, even times when I've sure made my share of mistakes when I was growing up. And when I served in the military. But faith has been part of the decision process of my entire life. And you learn, and I firmly believe, for all of us in these positions, number one, I believe you got to have faith to be able to do them, start off with, if you're going to be effective.
Yeah.
The second thing, I think there's a purpose for our lives that we don't even sometimes know those purposes, but thank goodness God does.
You were thrust into the position unexpectedly, as you said, 48 hours to prepare. Did you sense, though, that the people of your state, they wanted you to succeed because they'd been through a traumatic experience where a governor was forced to resign? It was an embarrassment to the state. And it is, I just think that they probably were thinking, Governor Parson, just make us proud. Just make us proud.
Well, and I wanted to do that so bad because I love the people of Missouri, and I love being the governor of Missouri and being part of that state. And I wanted to succeed. But you're right. But the first thing you had to do was you had to put people first.
Yeah.
And you had to realize that as the governor of the state, you are no more or no less than a public servant. And you got to humble yourself enough to do that every day, no matter whether you live in the cities or the rural areas of our state. But people were wanting a calmness in our state. And I think it's one of the things that you learn to do over a lifetime. You know, being in the military, being a sheriff, all the things you've had to deal with in your life, prepares you for that moment. And it was. I wanted Missouri to do well. And from then on, we just started doing the right thing day in and day out and really put the people of Missouri forward and focused on that. And we've been very successful since then. Things have went really well in our state. But in credit for a lot of people, not just me, but a lot of people.
But you've created an extraordinary legacy. I want us to get into that when we come back. We'll take a brief break. And I want to talk with Governor Parson about why it is that states are actually getting things done when the federal government is paralyzed. There is a reason for that. We have a lot more to talk about with Governor Parson. Don't go away. Keith Bilbrey, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we have to look forward to the rest of the evening?
Well, the Oak Ridge Boys are with us tonight, and professional athlete Zion Clark is here to shed light on foster care reform. It's all tonight on Huckabee. MikeHuckabee.com and sign up for his free newsletter and follow @GovMikeHuckabee on X.
And welcome back, everybody. Governor Mike Parson from Missouri is with me, and we're talking about why states get things done when the federal government doesn't. And I'm not sure they can. But you've seen a lot of things. Paid down a $600 million debt that the state had. Raised teacher salaries. Lowest unemployment rate in the history of the state. I mean, I look at the record that you have achieved. No wonder the people like you over there. But, I mean, it's been a record of just one accomplishment after another. Things people want to see happen. Why is it happening? And it's not just Missouri, but states across the country. Why are states getting it done and the federal government can't?
Well, first of all, and let me add one other thing to that. Three tax cuts in 5.5 years. No governor's ever did that in our state's history, the largest one. But what that will tell you is if you put money back into people's pockets, what will they do? They'll spend the money.
Yeah.
And they're a lot better at it than what we are. So those are the things you
what
do.
What a novel idea. Let people spend their own money.
Yeah, common sense ought to prevail sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the federal government is so dysfunctional right now. It's just frustrating for somebody like me that I believe so much in this country, and I believe I've got to live the American dream, and I want so bad for my kids and my grandkids and my great-grandkids now to be able to share that. But you can't do it dividing the entire country and thinking government's going to take care of everything. When I was talking about growing up, we didn't even know the government existed, per se. Churches took care of one another. Your neighbors took care of one another. And we don't need as much government in our lives today to regulate who we are. I just think the federal government, and I don't know how to fix it. I'm sitting here thinking I've been around a long time. I've never seen the dysfunction in Washington, D.C. that I ever, and how out of touch they are with just everyday people. But I think that's why governors in these states have done so well too, is we literally just put the people of our states first and the federal government second, to be right honest about it. And that's the way it should have been in the first place.
States have also been at the forefront of pushing back against things. For example, social media companies. Your state was one of the lead states in suing Facebook and Twitter and some of these social media companies for their abuse of the election system, where they told, basically, you're not going to get information that doesn't align with a political viewpoint that we want America to have. I mean, that's disturbing to think that would happen. And you guys have been at the forefront of saying, we're fighting it.
Look, I don't need to, and you in your opening comments, I don't need some company from the East or the West Coast that are totally out of touch with, I want to say, Midwest values to tell me the difference between a boy and a girl. We got that figured out. we don't need any help with that. We don't. But the reality of it is
good for you. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's those kind of things. But I think what you're talking about, right, they shouldn't be the ones running an agenda telling us what's right and what's wrong. We know people are smart enough to know what to do for their families to be able to do that. You don't need these think tanks that are out there. And then the propaganda they put out. And unfortunately, I like to think that people don't always listen to that, don't believe it. But they do. They do have a mindset in our kids and our grandkids. But I don't want them dictating what my kids are going to do or what the people of Missouri is going to do. So.
You grew up on a farm. You mentioned that earlier. What did you learn on the farm that was a great lesson that you were able to take sitting in the chief executive office of your state as governor, and it really helped you to make the right decisions?
Well, first of all, I think the way I grew up, we knew there was no child labor laws back then. I can tell you that right now.
So you knew that.
you learned early on what respect was, and you worked hard. I mean, you know, my first job was 14 years old, a gas station, not counting hauling hay before that. Doing all the kind of other things you do, being good neighbors. But it was the first time I had a job was in a gas station. I was 14 years old, and I'm learning how to wash windows and turn wrenches and fix tires. But I think that upbringing you have where you respect one another, you understand what good neighbors are, and you understand what helping people are. Like I said, we were in a I don't like the word poor because I didn't know I was poor when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But we probably were in some people's eyes. But, you know, government wasn't there to help us. You helped one another out. And I think that's where we've got so far out of touch with where we are in America today is that everybody seems like, how's government going to fix it? And we're not very good at fixing anything.
Yeah.
And the federal government sure not very good about fixing anything.
You're in the last year of your tenure as governor. You've got this wonderful book called No Turning Back. It's a great lesson. It's not just a story. It's a lesson about leadership and servanthood. What's next for you, and what do you hope you leave behind in terms of a legacy as the governor of Missouri?
I hope somebody reads it someday and understands you don't have to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth to be successful. Hmm. You don't have to have a lot of pedigrees hanging on the wall. You just got to be respectful to people. You got to work hard, and you got to stay true to your faith. And I hope that's what they get out of the book. You know, I'm going to go make up some time with grandkids, man. That's what I want to do, first of all. I've missed a lot of things as governor, as you well know. You don't control the clock, the time when you're there. But I want to do that. But you know what? I get up every morning. I'm ready to go. I'm not a guy sits around and waits on things. So I hope to be able to go back and give a little advices. One thing I do want to do, and the First Lady wants, both of us want to do this, I want to go back to churches.
Yeah.
People sent me letters from Sunday schools and churches all over the state, all over the country, and said, we're praying for the decisions you have to make, or they would see me. Someday I want to go back and tell a lot of those people how much that meant to me. At times, I really needed to hear that in the decision process.
What a powerful thing. You know, because if you go when you're in office and still facing an election, they say, yeah, he's coming to get our votes. To do it as you're talking about, what an incredible witness and powerful testimony that is going to be. Governor, it is great having you here. Thank you for coming to the show. Thanks for writing this incredible book. It's called No Turning Back. And I hope you'll keep up with Governor Parson as he completes his final year serving the state of Missouri. And you can do that. Go to our website at huckabee.tv. We have a link to get his book, to find out what he's up to and how the state of Missouri is doing with this outstanding governor. Keith, my heart is on fire for our next guest. I want you to tell us all about who they are.
I can't resist.
The Old Bridge Boys are just ahead, Governor, and later comedian Brandon Bestel is in the house. It's all ahead on Huckabee. Part of our audience. Just go to huckabee.tv and click on free tickets.
Big hand for Trey Corley and the Music City Connection. Hey, speaking of music, the Oak Ridge Boys have sold over 41 million records. That's a lot of records. 37 top 20 country hits, including number ones like Elvira and American Made. They have won so many awards. If I started listing them, I'd never get around to even getting to talk to them. And to top it off, they are some of the nicest and most genuinely humble people in the entertainment business. But all great things must come to an end, and they are currently on their 50th anniversary American Made Farewell Tour. We are thrilled that they've made time to visit us. I want you to welcome William Lee Golden, Richard Sturban, Dwayne Allen, and stepping in for Joe Bonsall, Benjamin James. They truly are America's band.
Yeah.
You know them as the Oak Ridge Boys. Give them a great welcome. You know, it's great having you guys here. I miss Joe, and I know Joe's had some health issues, had to retire last year. Benjamin, you jumped in the middle of the greatest band in this country, the Oak Ridge Boys. What were you thinking when they called you and said, would you join the band?
Yes.
That was a good answer. That's a great answer. Dwayne, when you guys all got this started, and 1973 was when the four of you really started and stayed together. That's unbelievable in the entertainment business. Did you ever envision that you would still be doing this 50 years later?
I didn't envision it even when I joined the group in 66.
Yeah.
And in, let's see, next month will be 58 years for me.
Wow.
And I don't regret one minute of it.
58 years.
Yeah. And William Lee was here when I came.
What year did you start?
I joined in the first part of 1965.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Richard, you're the young whippersnapper in the band.
The newest old guy. Let's put it that way.
What year did you join the Oaks?
1972.
72.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, all of us have grown up with your music, and I think more than that, the extraordinary sense of connection that you have had to this country. And you represent country music, but also, I think, just great music and something that Americans can cherish.
I think we're very fortunate that we live in Hendersonville, Tennessee, which we're very fortunate, too, that Mike Huckabee has chosen to come right to our hometown to do his great show. Aren't you happy about that? Yeah.
Mike Huckabee is happy about that, too.
This is 5 minutes from my house, you know. Here, put on your shirt and come down and do the show. Yeah, anytime, Mike. But I think another thing is we live just, you know, 23 minutes from Music City, USA, mm-hmm. where all of the greatest songwriters in the world live and work. Of course, Nashville is so spread out now, it includes Hendersonville. And we have a lot of recording studios right here in Hendersonville. They're scattered all over this part of the country. People are writing in every nook and cranny all around Nashville and surrounding areas. We are fortunate that we have access to all those great writers, and they've written our career for us. None of us really write that many songs, but we go to the greatest writers in the world down on Music Row, and they write songs for the Oak Ridge. We can tell them, we just got through recording a new album, and we told them we want this album to be about mama's boys, what mama taught us about love, life, living, about God, about our faith. And we got some of the greatest songs about mama's boys and what she taught us I think I've ever heard.
Well, your music is timeless. It's not like it's music that sounds old. It still sounds fresh, and you deliver it always. Every concert, it's like you're giving it your very best 100%. Richard, in this incredible career you guys have had, is there a moment, one of those moments that just sticks out for you is that signature time when you say, my goodness, I can't believe I got to do this?
There are so many moments. It's sometimes difficult to pick one. But if you push me to the point where I had to pick one.
That's what I'm doing.
Yes, yeah. I have figured you were doing that. I'd have to say being inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You know, if you sing.
Richly deserved, members of the Grand Ole Opry.
That's a close second right there, Grand Ole Opry, yes.
And, you know, Country Hall of Fame, Gospel Hall of Fame. There's not many awards you haven't had, but I think probably the biggest thing that ever happened to the Oak Ridge Boys, you came to the Huckabee Show here in Huckabee. That is the moment. They may not think so, but I'm excited that they're here. I don't want you to go anywhere because later on in the show, the Oak Ridge Boys are going to be performing one of their iconic number one hits with Trey and the band right here on this stage. We've got a lot more exciting show for you. And you know, this is America's band, but we've got America's announcer, Keith Bilbrey. He'll tell you what's coming up next.
Well, okay. Coming up, professional athlete Zion Clark's success story is one for the record books. Don't go away. Huckabee.tv and get your very own Made in the USA Huckabee mugs, t-shirts, and more.
I bet you recognize that song, Oak Ridge Boys song called Elvira. Hope you like it because you might get to hear a little bit of it later on in the show. Well, our next guest has defied all the odds, and I mean all the odds. Zion Clark was shuffled around to the foster system. He was labeled a problem child. But through hard work and determination, he became an All-American collegiate wrestler and MMA fighter. And he's the subject of an Emmy-winning Netflix documentary. I want you to take just a quick look.
When I was born, my mother gave me up for adoption. I lived in about 7 or 8 foster homes. I got starved and beaten a lot.
He had no family. He had no stability in his life. That was a recipe for disaster.
I just decided I don't want to feel like I'm weak or anything like that.
Wrestling is the oldest sport known to man. It's two human beings imposing their will on one another.
Lean back! Lean back! Nice job, Zion!
Other teams would make comments to other wrestlers. He worked so hard, and he thought he failed. But he was one of the biggest successes that I've ever had.
Zion Clark is the executive producer of a new film called Foster Dreams. It'll help reform the foster system. He's also training to become the very first Olympic and Paralympic athlete. Please welcome the inspiring Zion Clark. I think it's easy to be blown away and amazed. You got out there wrestling with these guys and beat them. And they must have at first looked at you and said, well, this is going to be easy. I'll take him. Did they think that?
Oh, yeah, they definitely thought that. But in the words of my mother, she was like, you don't know him, but you're about to. So
how incredibly tough was it to realize that you had so many challenges physically that so many people would have just said, Zion, the best you can hope for is just be, you know, sitting in a chair the rest of your life and let people feed you and let people take care of you. What was it that clicked in you and you said, nope, that ain't going to be my future?
I mean, man, since I was a little kid, you know, I went to the foster care system. I didn't really have a support system. But here's the thing, like, you know, a lot of kids, you see this, kids see someone do something, they're like, I'm going to try it. Now we might not be the best at it, but you're going to try it. And for me, it's as much as like wrestling or riding a bike or, you know, just being outside, you know. Everybody thought I want to be in the chair. Dude, I can run 13 miles an hour on my hands. Like, why would I want to be stuck in a chair?
You run 13
just
miles
about,
an hour
yeah.
on your hands.
I'm getting close to it, just about.
You might be able to outrun Keith Bilbrey at that speed. I think you could. I'm pretty sure. There have probably been people all your life who have underestimated you. And even now, as you're preparing to get into the Olympics, that would be historic. I mean, it would be absolutely mind-boggling. But I think about it not so much from what it would accomplish for you. I'm thinking about what it would do to inspire young people who say, I can't. And they look at you and they say, maybe I can.
Exactly. You know, for me, it's I took the bar and I broke it down and I reset it. And now, for me personally, I want to be the baddest athlete on the planet. But here's the thing. When it comes to inspiring the youth, inspiring everybody else, you got to set the tone. You know, you got to set the standard. Because if I'm not going to set the tone for people like me or the younger generation that don't have many options, who else is going to do it? And I come from a background of absolutely nothing. So if I can come from nothing to being this worldwide phenomenon, why can't they have the option too?
One of your passions is in the foster care system, and you've produced a documentary called Foster Dreams. You got basically passed around in the foster care system. Mm-hmm. It's a miracle that you came out of that with ambition and a desire to succeed, because a lot of kids are crushed by it. Why were you able to overcome what does, in fact, destroy the heart and soul of a lot of kids?
You know, I have to thank my family for that. You know, being adopted into a family, even though it was late, was very crucial for me. And you know, having a family that pushes you to be better and that doesn't look at you as different really kind of helps me help me get a hold of who I was. You know, I used to be that kid that wanted to quit, you know, but I'm going to tell you a little story. My mom, I'm a multiple-time track and field state champ and multiple-time national champion. Mm. And I remember in high school, I tried to quit and I would go hang out with my friends and tell my mom I would come home from practice after she told me how's practice? I'm like, oh, it was good. But then one day, you know, my coach showed up at my house, you know, I'm getting back from hanging out with my friends and I see coach's car in the driveway. And I'm just like, oh man. And so I sit there and my mom's like, listen, you can't hang out with your friends. You can't do nothing. Because if you're a Clark nut, so you gotta keep pushing, and I'm not gonna let you quit. Cause I was struggling at the time, you know, I wasn't moving fast, I wasn't doing well. But then she was literally like, you either do this or you do nothing. So I was like, okay, cool. Next thing you know, I became a multiple-time state champion and four-time placer while setting the state record. So it was about the people around me and at the family setting and the good people around me to push me to be a better version of myself.
How old were you when you got out of the foster system and you were adopted into a family that gave you the kind of love, support, and encouragement that you've just described?
I was 17.
17. Wow. But did you give up on being adopted and being a part of a family?
Without a doubt. You know, when I was getting kicked out of my last home, you know, I was just kind of like, I don't really care. It's like, they're like, get out. I was like, okay, bye. Like, that's how I felt. And, you know, I didn't really care where I ended up. I just really cared about, all right, look, I'm still alive. I'm here. And that's good enough for me. And so when I got taken in, you know, the foster system, they said that they've exhausted all their resources. They said I was a problem child. Dude, I had all these court cases and I had all this other crap going on. Mm. And they were just like, this is a very bad kid. And I was, but I wasn't, you know, just what a bad kid. What do you define a bad kid as? Usually kids that are bad need guidance. And that's all I needed. And so with that guidance, you see the man that sits in front of you today.
You know, I hope everybody understands that your adopted mother and family who loved you, I mean, I just can't even begin to imagine how much impact that's had. Now you're helping to change the foster system. We only have a few seconds left, Zion, but what would be the magic wand to fix what is a very broken foster care system in this country?
I would say what we're doing with Foster Nation, and especially Foster Dreams, out in Liberty City, Miami, we had a gracious donation from this bishop and a church for a plot of land where we're going to start doing amazing things on to change the lives of these kids. Everybody here can support any way that we can. We're looking for donations. We're looking for supporters. And I think that in the next phase of what we're doing, we're going to help thousands and thousands of kids.
Can't wait to see the film that you're working on called Foster Dreams. And I just want to say thanks for being here. Thanks for encouraging, inspiring us. We're going to be watching you for the Olympics and the Paralympics. Make history for all of us to be encouraged by it.
Thank you.
What an honor to have Zion Park here with us. His message is you and only you are in control of your destiny, so no excuses, no shortcuts. Hey, if you want to book him as a speaker, I can't imagine that you wouldn't, and I hope you will. If you'd like to stream the film Zion on Netflix, learn more about his organization, Foster Nation, and the documentary he's working on, Foster Dreams. If you go to Huckabee.tv, we will connect you to Zion. Now, Keith, no excuses, just tell us what's coming up next.
Next week for rock and roll legend Chuck LaBelle and Blood Money author Peter Schweitzer.
Welcome back. Brandon Vestal headlines comedy clubs and festivals all over America. His debut album, called Smooth, earned him SiriusXM Radio's Comedian of the Month honors. March 18th through the 24th, he's going to be at the Strat Hotel in Las Vegas, and his dry bar comedy special is called Brandon Vestal. Who? Well, you're about to find out. Please welcome the very funny Brandon Vestal.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you very much, Governor. I've always wanted to do that. That's cool. I live in Los Angeles, and I fly a lot. And I was checking in the other day. You know how they make you weigh your bag when you check your bag? That lady from the airline looked at me. She goes, so your bag is over 50 pounds? And for safety reasons, we can't put bags in excess of 50 pounds onto the flight. So, oh, I start to grab the bag. She goes, but if you give us $100 more dollars, we'll go ahead and throw it on the plane for you. Like, that's great, but how's that fix the safety issue? So let me get this straight. If I give you $100 more dollars, you're going to turn on the extra safety features? I didn't know that's how it worked. They shouldn't have given me that kind of information. We're about to take off. Like, sir, you need to put your seat up. We're about to take off. I just threw $100 at her. I was like, nope. Like, here's five more. Trey stays down. We started taxiing out, and I still had my phone out. She got so mad. She come running down the aisle. She goes, sir, you need to put your phone away. The signal from your phone could interfere with the plane. I just threw my credit card at her. Don't you talk to me anymore. Everybody on board gets Wi-Fi. Don't worry about the signals, everyone. I've paid extra for the safety package. I was in Las Vegas a few weeks ago performing, and I love that town. It's my favorite city to go to. So much going on, but I got aggravated because I was there 3 days and three nights, and the longest line I saw of all the places in Las Vegas was to get into the M&M store. There were people lined up down line. If you're not aware, there's a four-story M&M store on the Las Vegas Strip, and it's exactly what it sounds like I'm saying. It's a massive store with a whole bunch of M&Ms in it. And people were lined up down Las Vegas Boulevard to get into the M&M. And I asked them on day two when I walked by, I was like, what are y'all doing? What's really going on in there? Is Eminem the rapper coming out of a bowl of M&Ms? And they're like, no, we just like M&Ms. I was like, what? It's like, let me get this straight. You're in Las Vegas, Nevada, with all this stuff to do. There's fantastic entertainment, great nightlife, some of the best restaurants in the world, but you're like, nah, I'm standing right here until I know what kind of M&Ms they got in there. That is so stupid. I don't know any of those people that were in that line, but I can tell you one thing about every one of them. Wherever they came from, they had access to M&Ms. I don't care where they came from. Just think of all the M&Ms they passed on the way to the airport to fly to Las Vegas. Every physical structure they drove past had at least two bags of M&Ms in it. If we all stood up right now and did a little shake, I bet about 600 M&Ms would go flying around this room. Please don't go to Las Vegas for M&Ms. You go there to make mistakes like an adult. See that we got the election is set. 2024 is set, ready to go. That's great. Probably bring our country back together. I'm not a political guy. It seems exhausting to me to keep up with it all, but I live in Los Angeles, and I can tell you this about politics. If you find yourself in Los Angeles, California, and you happen to be a Republican, you should probably just keep that to yourself. They do not like Republicans in law. They're like, they don't even treat it like real people out there. They're like these mythical creatures that hide in the bushes. They'll snatch up your kids and force them to get a job. There's an app in L.A. County that tells you if Republicans live in your neighborhood. I'm serious. I've seen it. There's little elephant heads on the houses. I have seven Republican friends in Los Angeles, California. And I know it's seven because each of them have come to me in secret to tell me to shut up. They're like, I don't care what city you're in, you gotta shut up, dude. You're bringing too much heat on us. We're trying to blend in down here. We're DLRs, down low Republicans out here. They all have the same fear. They all have the exact same fear. Their biggest fear is that they're gonna slip up at work one day and say what they mean. Like they're just gonna be in the break room and can't take it anymore. They're like, all right, that's it, enough. Everybody, I think life begins at conception. Like, what'd you just say? I said, I love paying for other people's contraceptives. Thanks a lot, you guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, we're going to keep your secret very, very good.
Yeah, don't
just
tell
with
him.
Us.
Raise my rent.
This was great. Hey, if you want to book Brandon or get tickets to his upcoming shows, see his Dry Bar comedy special called Brandon Vestal. Who? Just go to Huckabee.tv. We will get you connected, and I have a feeling after hearing him tonight, you're going to want to. Well, for the Oak Ridge Boys music and to get tickets to their final shows in the American Made Farewell Tour, visit Huckabee.tv. Now, singing their number one smash, Elvira, with Trey Corley and the Music City Connection and Mike on bass, here are the Oak Ridge Boys!